If you're ready to stand on the line, if you're ready to fight back and serve it to the criminals trying to enslave you and steal your wealth through monetary creation and exorbitant taxation, you're in the right place. Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
Today's guest is Gary Collins. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Mark.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to have you on. Now, tell us a little bit about yourself since this is your first time on the Prepper Recon podcast.
Absolutely. I'm an interesting bird. That's the way I always started off. My main focus of what I do now is nutrition and exercise on the primal, paleo, ancestral health side. I write books. I have two full books and then a meal guide that I've put together. They're on Amazon, iTunes and Kindle. That's where I'm at. But where I come from, what makes me so unique in that world is I was a federal agent for 11 years. I was in the military as well, enlisted and an officer later on. So I'm a Mustang. I was in the Navy, intelligence cryptographer. So I had a little strange world there. But at the end of my career, I worked for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Food and Drug Administration. So that's where my whole knowledge of the inside workings of our health, medical, and food and drug industry, I have all the insights, basically. I used to investigate all of it. And all that, but working for the government for almost 20 years, I've seen multifacets of where I started in the government in my early 20s to where when I got out in my 40s, early 40s, late 30s, kind of see the whole evolution of how it went. But as we were discussing before we came on, I grew up in a small town in California. People look at California and they think, beach, surfing, big cities, LA. I grew up in the mountains in a small town of 1,800 people called Lone Pine, of all things. So I grew up poor, grew up hunting, fishing, hiking, being a typical redneck kid, basically. That's the best way I can put it. And for me, this whole evolution for people, they're going, what's this guy doing on a prepper show or a survival show? Well, that's where I'm at. I don't just teach in my business model and in my writings about just nutrition and exercise. It's about changing your entire life. So I'm a self-sufficiency guy. I'm a survivalist guy. Survivalist prepper, however you want to look at it. Those are different terms, but I consider them interchangeable, just different views and ends of the spectrum, I guess is the best way to put it. But how I kind of come in.
I got to get your opinion as a former FDA employee. Are we in good hands as far as the stuff that they put their stamp on? If they say, yeah, this is FDA approved, does that mean it's pretty okay to put that in our body?
Oh, Mark, you start right off with a loaded question. it's a tough one to answer. Would I want there to be absolutely no FDA? That's a rough one. I've debated that. The problem is that there is so many containers and there's so many companies and so many products that are regulated by the FDA and have to be examined by the FDA, that it's not big enough. Even if it was a perfect government agency, there would still not be even close to adequate because it's just too much. So even the stuff that gets inspected and gets a stamp of approval, you know, it's a government agency. It's just like anything else in our federal government today. It is, you know, influenced by industry, you know, companies, big companies. It's influenced by money, by, you know, congressional pressure, you know, all the way up to the executive office pressure. I mean, it rolls every which way. And I tell people that if you're relying upon the government to make you safe, you need to rethink your life paradigm. If that's your what you're totally relying on, and that's 99.9% of America right now, that you need to do your research yourself. And that's why I teach what I teach. You know, I know this stuff. I was there. I would never take a USDA or FDA stamp and just say it's good no matter what. I look at it and I examine what product I'm buying. What are the risk factors? Is it something I'm going to ingest and put in my body, on my body? You know, it depends. And, you know, for people, I just say, with anything in the government, you know, do your own research and come to your own conclusion. I would never say that everything with the FDA stamp of approval is unsafe, just as I would say everything without it is not safe. You know what I mean? It's about basically doing and living your own life your own way and being educated. And right. That's what I teach. I mean, I teach a lot of it's education.
Right. We got to take responsibility for our own life. Now, when did you first wake up to the need to prepare? And at the same time with that question, what's your biggest concern of threats to our current way of life?
For me, gosh, I would say it probably started around 10 years ago. I've always, you know, marched to the beat of my own drum. Even in the government, I was not the model employee, I guess is the best way to put it. I questioned everything. And not only that, but I was always trying to improve the systems that I was involved in, which got me into all kinds of trouble.
Yeah, but they didn't like you.
They did not like me at all because I saw a system that was broken, and by nature, I'm a guy who fixes things. I mean, that's what I do. Everything that I touch, I try and fix or make better. And that was not. And being a naive young kid when I came in, not understanding, you know, thinking, you know, I'm here to do my best. I'm here, you know, I'm a public servant. I serve the people. And that's how I took it. And that is not the role model employee in today's federal, state, city governments. It's yes, men and women, do as you're told, don't ask questions, even if it's you know, skirting laws, illegal at times. I saw things that would blow people's minds. With that, watching that and being involved in it, I realized, okay, we're in trouble. I mean, this is going the wrong way. And for me, the thing that worries me the most, you know, a lot of people worry about the monetary collapse, and that is a good topic. But the problem I have with that is that there's nothing in this world or any monetary system that is backed by anything. So it's like it's a house of cards. So that's why I think it's always going to be propped up for the most part, that it will never reach catastrophic proportions just because it would completely implode. And I just don't think that's a real rational possibility. Is it possible? Absolutely. But to me, there's too much to lose and there's too many countries involved. But with that being said, don't get me wrong. I own gold. I own silver. You know, I own land. I own tangible things. So I mainly look at it for me as freedom by the way I prepare and the way I'm building my homestead and what I'm doing. It is truly priority one is freedom. But I do say that, you know, just like, you know, natural catastrophes. I mean, heck, I grew up and lived in Southern California right along the Andreas Fault. I've been through many earthquakes. You know, that worries me the most is something like that. You know, anything, you know, up here, I'm now in Washington State, so it's a little bit different. Where I'm at, there's not a ton of natural disasters besides forest fires, which we had in California as well, a lot of them. So for me, it's kind of preparing for natural disasters more than anything. But also the next step is also the economy and how I can survive and get on by my own. You know, if something goes tragically wrong, well, how am I going to make it? You know, is can I get by for 30 days if there is some massive natural disaster? You know, Hurricane Katrina. I mean, who saw that coming? Well, I guess we did, but they all ignored the levee system. But, you know, with that, it was chaos. One of our offices when I was in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services was in Baton Rouge. So they were in the front lines. We had many people deploy down there. And to see the absolute mayhem that followed, I was like, man, the people who are unprepared, are dead, or really struggling. You know, they're relying on someone to come get them and help them because they don't know how to survive on their own. So for me, I guess that's a long-winded answer of where I'm going. It's an open-ended question because it changes, I guess, as I get further into my journey as becoming totally self-sufficient. Because for people, your audience who have never heard from me before, listened to other podcasts I've been on, I have 20 acres in Washington State, in northeastern Washington State, and it's rough. I bought it. There's nothing there. I mean, literally raw land. So I'm developing it from zero, well, septic, roads, you know, starting with just getting drivable roads. It's still going to be four-wheel drive no matter what. You know, now I'm trying to build a house in this isolated area. And how do you get materials up there? You know, what can you build? How big of a footprint can you make? It's all, you know, I'm all learning this as I go. Matter of fact, my contractor before I got on here emailed me the final plans, you know, for to approve for the house. So, yeah, I'm on an interesting path, I guess, best way to put it.
Yeah, I just bugged out myself to get out of Fort Lauderstand, and while I'm in a more remote place than I was, it's nothing like what you're doing right now. But you know, we're renovating the house that we bought here, and I had to do some things to sort of upgrade the studio and get it in a little bit better working order, which there's probably still a little bit of echo right now, but it's going to get better over the next few weeks. And you know, we're going to Home Depot once, sometimes twice a day. So I guess that's not really an option for you. And I'm thinking, you know, you were sort of part of this broken system that didn't want to be fixed. And so really the best solution is to just kind of walk away from it and wash your hands of it, because if it doesn't want to be fixed, you know, there's no solution in the world that can fix it.
And that's a very valid point. And you really analyzed it well. And that's what I saw. I saw at the end that I'm beating my head against a wall that is not going to move. And for me, the problem too is a lot of people in my job, by the time they get to retirement at 57, literally most of the coworkers I worked with within 5 years were dead. So that wasn't a good option because it's that stressful. The job and not only the job, but the most stressful point was dealing with the bureaucracy. And people find that pretty shocking that, you know, you carry a gun, a badge, and all this stuff. It was actually dealing with the bureaucracy that would literally stress you out. Doing the job was such a small part of what your duties were. I mean, roughly 25% of your duties were actually doing your job. The rest was navigating the BS and the system and trying to keep your head above water and not get it chopped off at the same time. And I agree. That's what I looked at. I went, you know what? I've had a good run. I did my best. I served my country. It's time to move on.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today. Essential oils offer a natural, chemical-free solution to so many of our daily needs. Oils can be used for just about anything, including fighting off bacteria, to de-stress, ward off bugs, relieve arthritis pain, and boost the immune system. Young Living Essential Oils offers the highest quality products and educational resources, so you'll learn what to use and how to use it. Go to livingalifeoflove.com. That's livingalifeoflove.com to order your starter kit today. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the process of getting off grid. Now, you said you're putting in a septic system. That's going to be for your sanitation. Now, what are you doing for water, mm-hmm. and what are you doing for power, and what size shelter are you planning to put there in, and what style is it going to be?
Yeah, I'm doing things a little bit differently than most people. I didn't understand this when I started on doing this a couple years ago, but I'm doing it all by code. I'm smart enough to know there's Google Earth today. They can see you no matter what. So why cause yourself a lot of headache for absolutely no reason? And, you know, in these small towns where I'm at, you know, everyone's nice. Everyone knows you're building. So you're going to get it one way or another. Someone's going to know what you're up to. So why even try to go that way? So for me, I've got everything permitted. I'm getting all my permits. So what I did started with, I had to get the roads done. Luckily, my property, which some people saw as a negative, but the lower half is actually transmission power lines. Well, yeah, that's bad if they're right next to your house, but it's not. What it did is it gave me roads. It gave me about 3/4 of a mile of free road that's maintained. I never have to touch it. They maintain it because they have to. So I only had to maintain and fix the last 200 yards. So with that, I started with the road and got it drive worthy. But like I said, still four-wheel drive. You can get it with two-wheel drive, but you'll probably get stuck at least half the time. But once I started that, I had to figure out what's the main concern when you go off grid. Water. That's the biggie. And you can do everything perfect. If you don't have water, you kind of screwed yourself. So luckily, where I'm at, it's the land of lakes up here. I mean, there's lakes everywhere. There's water. It's just, can you get to it? So we had to drill, and doing my well, it was iffy. That's where I started, because I said, if I can't find water, this changes everything. This basically turns into glorified camping land. But I got lucky. I hit water at 507 feet, I believe. That's a deep well. That's about $25,000 worth of well.
Wow.
Once you get the pump and everything in. Yeah. And it was about $10,000 over my out-of-the-sky budget. So it was a little bit of a shocker and eye-opener, but luckily I got a really, really good deal on the land. So it worked out, and I said, and people may not understand, I don't know how many people have gone through the process I've gone through on your show or listeners, but you can't finance an off-the-grid house. I don't care if it's done all permitted properly. It does not matter. You cannot finance it. No bank will touch it, at least in this part of the country. I called everywhere. I tried for days to find financing. So you have to pay cash for everything. And with that, I had to look at, you know, power. And I said, you know, I want to go off the grid. I'm leaning solar and wind, but let me check. $80,000 to run power.
Wow.
And I had to get permission. I had to get permission from all the landowners in between the last power supply and my property on top of it to be able to run the power lines all the way up. And it was over a mile. I was like, gosh, yeah, that's not even going to happen.
You get a lot of PV panels for $80,000.
Oh, and solar now is so affordable. It's the technology has drastically changed in the last 5 years. And so for right now, from the rough, I've got my panels. I bought those early because there was a great deal on 300-watt panels that I got. And with that, it's going to be roughly about $12,000 to have the whole system put in. That's not bad. That's not bad by today's standards. And it'll run everything. I mean, yeah, you got to watch your power, but there's no real, you know, I'm not giving up, you know, lights. I'm not giving up. You know, I can run a washer and dryer. I'll just do it smart and I'll use my generator. You know, there's ways around it. So I'll be using solar and wind as power. And then septic, I'm up on the top of a mountain. So it's a lot of granite and decomposing granite. Well, everyone who was talking to me and bidding me was telling me I had to get a high pressure system because you have to force the leaching out and get it in. And so it dissipates. Well, that's an extra $10,000. And I went, oh, God, now I'm going to spend $17,000 on septic? Oh, here we go, you know. Well, I kept asking. I finally found a local guy who does septic. And he said, oh, don't listen to those guys. I can get you one. I get you a standard one in here, no problem. Sure enough, you know, $5,500. So I was able to get normal septic in, as far as a leach field and everything. So I got the standard septic system in, gravity system. And we just got that finished. That finished up about a month ago. So it's fully installed. And now we're on to the dwelling. And I'm only looking at about 800-900 square foot. That's about big as I want to go anyway. I'm done with big houses and I've owned enough. I'm single, just me and my dog. Really don't need that much space. I live in a travel trailer. You know, I lived in a 20-foot all last year, and then I bought a 23-foot to go a little bigger so I can, because I got to run my business out of here too. So I'm going to be living in this thing for probably a couple more years. So yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at. And the house is going to be just a standard 2-story pitched roof. I was looking at a gabled roof and more of a lookout because I have beautiful 180 views of the valley and lakes and stuff. It was $25,000 for that gabled roof extra. So that got axed about 3 weeks ago.
It's kind of like,
yeah, that's, I mean, and people, I'm, yeah.
You remember like when you were a kid and you'd have $20 in your pocket and you're going to the fair and you thought, man, this is going to, I'm going to go all day and ride all the rides and eat everything and play every game and come home with 10 bucks in my pocket. You're there for 20 minutes. It's gone.
It's exactly it. My original budget was $125,000 total, land, everything, finish. And it was realistic. It wasn't out of the realm. But one thing I didn't understand, because I've had two houses built in the past, and the last one was a custom house in New Mexico. So I wasn't totally unfamiliar with the building process, and I've remodeled several houses. I've gutted properties. I've owned rental properties. So I wasn't a total rookie. But I'm no contractor by any stretch either. And once I started looking into it, once you shrink that square footage down, well, guess what? Price per square foot skyrockets. It just goes up.
Yeah.
And you go remote, it goes up even more. And yeah. I'm like, oh my God. So now I'm probably looking at a budget. And I'm documenting. I have all this on my YouTube channel. I do videos of everything. I have a video of actually us dragging the drilling rig up. I don't know how many tons this drilling rig was, but we had to drag it up with a bulldozer because we couldn't make it. But yeah, so I'm documenting everything. I'm very open and disclosing all my costs, not hiding anything, because I want people to know, because the goal is to show that anyone can do it if you plan properly and think about it and do it in steps. So I'm probably looking more at a budget closer to 200,000 now, but that's not bad to own 20 acres, have a beautiful house with beautiful views, not tied to the grid, you know, accessible roads. That's my security fences. That's everything. So that's not too bad. That's not bad. It sounds like a lot, depending where you live. But in the end, I believe it's well worth it. And I think people can do it for cheaper. It just depends the part of the country and the topography that you're dealing with. I'm dealing with some of the most difficult you probably can deal with. You know, that's just it. If you go flatter land and go lower, I think you could probably knock 50 grand off it. Easy.
What were the most?
So I think it just depends.
What were the most important attributes for you when you were looking for a retreat property?
Mine was view. I grew up in a beautiful part of California, so I had all these beautiful mountain views. Anyone who's heard of Mount Whitney, that's above my town. And so I was, you know, living in cities and all this over the years. And luckily in New Mexico, I had beautiful views there as well. The things I wanted most were either a creek ran through it, or I had overlook of a lake or water. I never wanted to be on the water because bugs, and when you get closer to water, there's more people around you. You know, closer quarters, because everyone loves to be on the lake. I'm on the lake right now. I'm actually staying in a little tiny RV park that is the lake that I overlook from my view. So I can see my property from the lake on the top of the mountain, which is pretty cool. But that was the big thing, was views and water. I wanted to have tranquility. I wanted to be able to look out my windows and just relax, sit on my deck and just chill out and not have to worry about anything. Those were the biggest things for me. The access, I was up in the air for that. This is probably about as hard of access as I was willing to go. It's difficult. I mean, there's two roads in, one the front end and one the back end of the property, and they're old logging roads. If that one power road wouldn't have been there, it would have been very difficult to get in and out of the property, even in perfect weather. And with that being said, I can't stay here in the winter, more than likely. I'm going to have to, kind of gauge how that's going to work and how I'm going to get in and out of the property once winter hits. So it's going to take me a couple years to figure out. More than likely, it'll be ATV, snowmobile. More than likely, snowmobile when winter hits to be able to get up the hills and get in and out.
That sounds pretty cool, though. It probably will be the first year, and then not the second year. But it sounds cool.
And I don't mind that. And see, I've always been a traveler, an adventurer. I got to travel the world in the government. I traveled all over the country. I traveled all the time. I started my career in the U.S. State Department Diplomatic Security Service, so I was on the road 60-70% of the year. And, you know, I'm just used to that. So for me, that's why this, I had to experiment. And that's why I talk, people always ask me, well, how'd you do this? I mean, this is a lot, you know? And I go, well, I just didn't do it overnight. I started looking for land about 8 years ago and started, you know, cause I got to travel a lot going across the country. I got to see a lot of places, and actually I ended up in Spokane, Washington, for working for, another case out there. And helping another agent. And then I ended up meeting a girl and dating a girl in Spokane. And one of my other buddies I grew up with lived in the other part of Washington. So I spent a lot of time in Washington. And I liked it. And I tell people that too, is plan it. That's the biggest part, plan. And it is kind of crazy. But for me, I plan to spend until I can get it all set up, 6 months in San Diego in my travel trailer. And then 6 months up here and split the year. Until I can get all this done. And plus I still have business dealings in San Diego that I have to, you know, for the next couple of years at the bare minimum, I have to manage. And, you know, you still have to pay the bills. I didn't just quit my job and just all of a sudden, you know, money started flying out my orifices. It was, you know, I have to continue to work. I have to continue to pay for bills. And I run my company. I'm a college professor part-time as well. So there's a lot going on, and I want people to think that this was some simple, easy thing that I did. It's been a struggle, and it will continue to be a struggle, but I'll tell you what, it's all worth it. It's 100% worth it. You know, I'm sitting here staring out my window looking at this beautiful lake, you know, and I know my property's just right up above it, and the where I'm staying at was $2,000 for 6 months. So yeah, it can be done.
Very
cool. If you have the will, it can be done.
Very cool. Now, besides going off grid, you're also something of a fitness and exercise and diet guru. I'm going to make sure we get a good picture of you for the folks to look at on Prepper Recon, especially the ladies. I'm sure they'll like it. But it looks like you take a healthy lifestyle pretty seriously.
You know, I do, and people think I'm pretty extreme, and I'm not. And that's what I teach, is that anyone can accomplish what I've accomplished. I was always passionate. I played sports from age 7, competitive sports. No, military, boot camp, officer candidate school, you know, law enforcement academies, you name it. It's all been physical exercise and being healthy. So it's always been a passion of mine. So that was one thing that I've always continued to be healthy. And I went through a transition with FDA where I figured out that I was doing a bunch of things wrong, unbeknownst to me, you know, getting caught in the system and understanding everything we're taught about health in this country is completely upside down. It's to keep you on the wheel. And for me, people think I'm a lot younger than I am. I'm actually in my mid-40s. And for me, I've had spinal fusion. I've had wrist surgeries. I have, you know, patellar tendonitis. I have, you know, nerve damage on the left side from my major back injury. So I'm not perfect. I'm pretty beat up physically as far as mechanical injuries. Because people always go, well, God, Gary, if you're so healthy, you have a lot of issues. I go, no, well, these are broken issues, you know, just as if you were a caveman out in the wild, breaking, you know, he could break bones, sprain ankles. I had all that, sports injuries. And that's what I teach, though, is that anyone can do it. If I can do it, anyone can. And if it's about having the right information. The Primal Power Method was developed to get all of my knowledge, everything I gleaned from the government, all of my personal knowledge. You know, and I also have 3 degrees. I have an extra degree in exercise science as well as criminal justice and forensic science. I'm certified in multiple facets of exercise and nutrition. I'm a master personal trainer. I work with clients. So I take that side of it very, very seriously because I tell everyone who's prepping or in the survivalist world, self-sufficiency world, that if you don't have your health first, you're kind of wasting your time. It all starts with your health, because what's the point of prepping if you can't walk up a hill, you know, with a pail of water, or you got to haul, you know, a small deer or a large deer or quarter something out? Well, how's that going to work?
We just saw that.
You can't live 5 miles further, yeah, outside a hospital. What are you doing?
Yeah, we just saw that this past winter. People that were having snow accumulate on their roofs, and they were having to get up and shovel the snow off their roof to keep their roof from caving in, and they were keeling over with heart attacks. So yeah, you're right. If you're not taking care of your body, if you're not going to be able to handle any type of a disaster scenario. And the same thing happens down here in South Florida where I'm at when we get hurricanes, because people get out there with chainsaws and they got to clear these big logs out of cut the log off their car so they can, or out of their driveway so they can get the car out or whatever. And they've been sitting on the couch for the past 3 years, eating potato chips and watching Oprah, and the ticker just can't handle it. You got to, at a bare minimum, keep that cardio going. And you know, you need some strength to be able to lug that snow around and those logs. And every disaster scenario is like that. If it's an earthquake and you're doing a rescue mission, you're having to remove rubble to try to look for people that are still alive. Same thing. You need that cardio health, and you need a little bit of strength training. You don't have to be a Olympic trainer, but you got to have something, and the only way you're going to get it is if you make a priority out of it, and you set aside a minimum of 3 days a week to making sure that you're in some type of shape and you're getting some type of strength exercise and cardio exercise. Now, you're the fitness guru, so tell us a little bit about your Primal Power Method.
Yeah, and like I said, I created this in order to share my knowledge, because I was getting asked so many questions, and I've always had people. I started training people in my early 20s because I was always into fitness. And the Primal Power Method is about 5 key principles. And the first one is knowledge is power. And that is anything that you take, any endeavor, you know, today we want to get shortcuts. And we just want the quick fix. I tell people that doesn't work in anything in life. So you have to understand what you're doing. So you have to take responsibility for understanding just the basics of what health and exercise is. And it boils down to eating correctly and moving. I mean, honestly, that's what it boils down to. It's that simple. Number 2 is avoid extremes. Again, we're into the quick fix society. So, you know, we think if we take, you know, this pill or, you know, buy this piece of gyrating equipment I saw in an infomercial, that's all I need. You know, I just go 50 million miles an hour for a week, lose the weight, and I'm done. It doesn't work that way. So always avoid extremes. Keep it simple. This stems from my government career of, you know, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. I found that to be an interesting, you know, way of looking at things in the government, considering it was completely the opposite of that. And it drove me nuts that everything was so complicated all the time for absolutely no reason, except for someone had to write something to, you know, legitimize their job. So for me, it's just keep everything simple. Don't overthink it. A lot of people like to go out and reach out to too much information. We're in the information age. If you try and, you know, Google exercise or nutrition, diet, you're going to get a bazillion hits in different directions, and you're going to end up screwing yourself up. So always keep it simple. Keep it down to the basics. Number four is something is better than nothing. People think you have to go, again, to the extreme. I tell people it's consistency. You know, people look at me and they think that I'm in the gym 2-3 hours a day, 5-6 days a week. I spend 45 minutes in the gym 4 days a week. I mix it in with bike rides. I mountain bike and I road bike, and then just working around the property. I just make sure I move every day. And one of the most easiest things to follow is walk. For God's sakes, walk every day. Walk somewhere. Every night I walk for a mile. I take my dog out. We walk. It chills him out. It chills me out. And I get some exercise out of it. And people are pretty shocked at the results you'll get by just walking every day. Take action. Number five is take action today and every day. And that comes down to consistency again. Just do something. Just make sure you put, you know, schedule your workout time into your day. Because I hear this excuse all the time. I don't have time. I'm too busy. You don't know my life. I have this. You're looking at a guy who literally spent his whole life on the road, moving around. I used to pack what I used to call a workout survival kit in the back of my government car. And then I'd have one everywhere I went, took it with me traveling. And I would literally work out on a break. If we had a break between surveillance, I would go to a park and go work out for 30 minutes. I mean, this stuff isn't rocket science. And we watch on average, 4 hours of TV a day? I think we can squeeze in 45 minutes to an hour. You know?
Yeah, if you can't give up the TV, so watch it on the glider. You know, do the glider and watch the TV at the same time if you can't give up the show.
Exactly, you know, and not only that, but it's just we have excuses for everything today. We make excuses for everything we do and our failures. And that's one thing I teach people too. When I get a client or people, I do a seminar and they ask, you know, I ask people, I go, why are you here? Are you here for, you know, your husband, your kids, another loved one, boyfriend, girlfriend? And I get a bunch of hands raised and I go, you do realize you're here for the absolute wrong reason. And they look at me and they're like, gosh, what a jerk. And I go, no, if you're not here for yourself first, you're missing the entire point of changing your life. You can't help anyone else out until you change yourself first. And you do it for you. It's almost like Alcoholics Anonymous is what I tell people. It's a similar philosophy that if you're doing it for someone else, you're deflecting that responsibility on someone else. So if you fail, you go, yeah, I failed, but you know, my husband will be, I'll catch up to it later. But if you fail yourself, you internalize that a lot more than if you're doing it for another person. I've always noticed that. I will beat myself up for doing something stupid far more than anyone else will beat me up for it. You know, so that's kind of the approach I take. And you know, it's not hard. My books are 150 pages or less because I don't think you need 400 pages of gobbledygook on science and multiple philosophies. What I teach is straightforward. It's control your blood sugar, control insulin. Insulin's the most powerful hormone in your body. Once you understand insulin, basically everything falls into place. And that's, I teach a paleo diet, but primal is different. Primal is a lifestyle with the paleo diet tweaked is the best way I can put it. Have you ever had anyone explain what paleo and primal are on your show?
No. So give us a little brief synopsis of that.
Yeah, it's real basic. Paleo is no grains, no legumes, and no dairy. It is based upon the Paleolithic era, which we would have lived in, which would have been 10,000 to 2.4 million years ago, roughly, before the advent of agriculture. And it's saying that these food items really weren't introduced until the agricultural era, till we stopped being nomadic, till we started settling in one place and growing crops. And it's based upon that, and it is literally that simple. You know, so what are your main foods? Well, obviously, it's going to be a protein source, animal protein source, healthy fats from animal protein, animal sources, you know, fruits, vegetables, seeds, and nuts. Basically, that is the premise of the diet. People go, well, God, what would I eat. That doesn't leave me much of anything. I go, well, God, that's pretty much what you would have to eat if you had to survive on your own. You wouldn't be able to go get Twinkies at 2 o'clock in the morning. Those don't exist. You know, these refined foods that we eat today, they don't exist in nature. There's no such thing. We're literally feeding our bodies foreign substances that they've never been exposed to before. And once you get that, and then primal, paleo is basically the diet structure. That's what it focuses on. Primal, again, is the lifestyle. So I call it mind, body, soul. It's about exercise. It's about diet. And it's about being a better person and better steward of the environment. That's what primal is about. And with the tweaks in the diet, we allow dairy, long as it's from grass-fed cows, free range, you know, you can implement. We don't recommend consuming a lot of dairy because, again, in nature, the odds of you consuming a lot of dairy, depending on regions of the world, it's all, I understand how all this works. It's very different depending what region you came from or would have lived in. But for the most part, these are basic principles that work for 95%+ of the people. And with that, we do say you can, if you want to play with grains a little bit, we recommend their heirloom and that they are, you know, that they're fermented. But even I say, hey, grains have a lot of anti-nutrient properties between phytic acid. You know, grains are just very harmful to the body, especially grains today because they've been hybridized so many times. We're not dealing with a grain that we had 100 years ago. You know, wheat today has 100 times the amount of gluten it did 100 years ago. That's a far different grain than what, you know, just our grandparents would have consumed. And that's where you get all the gluten intolerances, celiac disease, you know, chronic inflammation. So that's basically the nutshell of how what I teach is. It's a little more complicated than that. I get into the science, but I do it without, you know, glazing you over. I try and teach it in simple ways and ways that you'll understand. So you just get the basics. So that's basically what primal and paleo is. It's confusing because there's a lot of different people who call themselves paleo primal experts who have literally no background in health and nutrition, none. And it makes things very confusing because they haven't even fixed themselves and figured it out themselves yet. And then they're trying to teach other people. And I rip on these people. They know who they are because, you know, I've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
And for someone with my background, it's pretty upsetting to see some kid graduate from college and put out some stupid cookbook with cute little recipes and, you know, pictures and call themselves a health expert. And it kind of torques me off a little bit, but that's anything.
It's a lot of great stuff you've given us to think about. And that's just, I love your getting off the grid project. I think that's just fantastic. And I think we're gonna have to get you back on the show to tell us how that's coming along in a few months. Now, Gary, where can folks go to learn more about your primal power method and self-sufficiency?
Yeah, it's actually all on my webpage. So www.primalpowermethod.com, everything's there. So all my videos are linked in there, as far as there's a whole page of videos that are all my YouTube videos, all my blogs there where I give you a bunch of free information, all my social media is there, all my products are there. I sell, besides my books, I have supplements, small groupings. I'm not a supplement store, stuff that works, and a little selection of exercise equipment that you can take anywhere on the road. And I sell some food products. I just actually put out my grass-fed jerky and my grass-fed beef sticks. And I have some chicken cranberry bites that are great for on the road and people who, you know, at work who are afraid of cheating and doing things, eating things they shouldn't be. So if you go to my website, basically everything's there. It's all linked. You can even link to iTunes and Kindle and my Amazon page, my author page.
That's fantastic. I love grass-fed beef. It just has a completely different taste, and I love it. You know, I think some people, they have trouble with it if they're not used to it because it's, you know, they're used to the grain-fed stuff that's what's cheap and mass-produced. So, but I love it, so I'll have to check some of that out.
Well, that's a good point. And one of my books is actually one. The first one is about like the primal power method in general, primarily focused on nutrition and exercise. And then I wrote another one that was called The Organic Caveman. And that's more about GMOs, raising your own food, how to find non-CAFO meat, I have websites in there that you can go to and search your local area. I mean, a perfect example is, even though I'm out here in the middle of nowhere, I have to travel 45 minutes just to find a healthy grocery store. And it's the only one around. It's the only one around, and it is expensive. Oh my God. But, and that's what I tell people is, you can find it, you know, and you just have to go look for it. And is it worth that 45 minute drive? You bet you it is. Because anyone who is tasted free range chicken and grass fed beef, oh, it is phenomenal. The taste isn't even close to that stuff you get at your Vons or local grocery store.
Very cool. Gary, thanks so much for making time to come on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback or audio edition at Amazon.com today.